Hey guys, how's it going? Good, good. Yeah, me too. Happy day. The American pigs have reached a nuclear agreement with the Iranian ones. Oh, and the entire UN Security Council plus Germany. It's not really that I'm happy, it's just that it's a relief, kind of. Yeah, I'm happy, too. Things could be worse. Much, much worse. Anyway, Reza Marashi, he's going to be here on the show today to talk all about the nuclear deal, what's in it. I'm sure he's read as much as he can of it so far, that kind of thing. I was trying to get a little bit of it read, but basically all it is what we already know from the framework announced a couple of months back, just with more details. So I talked with Gareth, and he said, nah, I got to read it and take notes and write about it. Ain't got time for no interviews. All right, well, fine then. Gee whiz. I congratulated him and gave him credit and said, hey, you know, you helped do this. And he thought that that was silly and laughable. But, I don't know. Seriously, think of how many lies about Iran and their nuclear program would be left standing without Gareth Porter and his journalism. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know what I mean. Anyway, so presumably I'll have him on the show tomorrow to talk about it at least. He'll have something for Middle East Eye by then, I'm sure. All right, and then, so Reza Marashi, he's going to be here from the National Iranian American Council. He's there in Vienna celebrating. I hope he's not too drunk by the time I get him on the show. Oh, yeah, no, I guess maybe he's Muslim and doesn't drink. Oh, that's a shame. He ought to be drinking and celebrating. Maybe does drink, and I don't know anything about what I'm talking about. Anyway. Yeah, and then Joshua Hughes is going to be here again to talk about the great trip to Costa Rica that you could win. Well, you got to pay for the trip, but the stay is on him. A house to yourself for a week, 3 meals a day, and 100 fun things to do at his awesome farm in the jungles of Costa Rica. And really, flying down there is a few hundred bucks. It's not that big of a deal. They'll scoop you up from the airport and take care of and drop you off at the end and take care of everything in between. Does that sound like a deal or what? Go read all about it, scotthorton.org/raffle. Joshua Hughes is going to be back on the show. Now, the deal is, and the reason why I got him back on the show is, the drawing's tomorrow. Tomorrow. So, you better hurry up and buy a ticket. Or, you know, more tickets. scotthorton.org/raffle. Help support the show and also win a trip to Costa Rica. And the thing is, you can go whenever you want to. So it doesn't have to be this August. I might have wished I could have put off. I should have said, you know, the drawing, I mean, to finish that sentence. I should have said, you know, I don't know, the 23rd or something like that. But I wanted you to be able to plan to be able to go in August if you need to go in August and be able to still get your tickets early enough that they're affordable and that kind of thing, you know. Trying to be fair to you guys, to whoever the winner is. So the drawing's tomorrow. So hurry up and buy your raffle ticket. And hey, if there's anybody you know who maybe they don't even care about anti-war radio shows, but they might want to win a trip to Costa Rica. Be kind of a shame if somebody like that won, but be nice to get their money. So spread the word around. Tell everybody. Tell your evil neocon father-in-law. Well, maybe not. Anyway. No, because I think it's somebody that Joshua Hughes is probably going to want to get along with. You know, send your evil neocon father-in-law down there. Anyway, you know what I mean. It's going to be great. Buy tickets. scotthorton.org/raffle. And then also, and this has been working out for people, anybody who donates $100, oh, those are $50. Did I say they're $50 for a raffle ticket? Anybody who donates $100 to the show, you get other stuff too, like a 1 ounce silver QR code commodity disc. You could get Sheldon Richman's book. Oh, and Sheldon Richman's book or Charles Goyette's book or Lou Rockwell's audiobook. And, Derek Sheriff offered up three. And we did sell one. And possibly two. I haven't heard back on the second, so I don't know exactly. But there's at least one still available, and that is a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian audiobooks. Everything they've done so far, which is a couple of dozen, and all the ones they're going to do into the future, which is probably going to be hundreds for a long, long time. Listen and Think audio for $250. Anybody donates $250, the next two people, or at least one person, I don't know about the other person who's donated more than $250, but I didn't hear back from about the audiobook thing yet. That's kind of in limbo still. But the one person has got his lifetime subscription already in effect. So, there's at least one more of these available. That's anyone who donates $250 or more to the show for the summer fundraiser for the Scott Horton Show. And you know what? You got to admit it, especially those of you who've been listening for a long, long time. I've been good on this Iran nuclear stuff for a decade. More than a decade. I've been telling you the truth about just how safeguarded their civilian nuclear program is and just what a bunch of hype, all the hype to the contrary, has been this whole time. You can't find me wrong on the facts throughout the entire decade, and virtually all those archives are available. Certainly the interviews going all the way back are. Anyway, for years and years and years I've been telling you. And now, so what do we have before us? A deal that all it is in effect adding, again, the additional protocol to their safeguards agreement, which they used to abide by during 2003 to 2005, during what were supposed to be good faith negotiations by the E3 without the participation of the U.S. That's Britain, France, and Germany. And then they quit abiding by it because the West was not negotiating in good faith. It's all cover for procrastinating for regime change. And anyway, so, if you want to help support a show that has been right on this all along, has given you access to hear the points of view of people like, well, on the journalism, of people like Gordon Prather and Gareth Porter and Flint Leverett and, I don't know, Giraldi, hell, a lot of these guys, man, a bunch of guys I can't think of, all the NIAC guys, all the nuclear experts and stuff I've had on to talk about this over these years. Yeah. It's a world of BS out there. So if you want to help support and win a trip to Costa Rica, hell, scotthorton.org/raffle. How about that? All right. So, now there's a lot of things to be said about the Iran nuclear deal. I think, first of all, it's pretty safe to say that it's a done deal and Congress can't kill it. They would need a veto-proof majority in both houses of Congress to override this deal, and they're not going to do that. So the Republicans do control both houses of Congress, but they don't have enough votes to override his veto. So even if they do pass a resolution to try to scotch the deal, they can't. And I kind of wonder whether they're actually even going to be able to do that. And I know Israel has a hell of a lot of influence, and I know it's, you know, partisan politics play into it too, but on the other hand, this is an agreement reached with all other major world powers in concert together. So, eh. No. And the facts don't matter, but the politics of that kind of matter. America as world leader and all this crap. Then it's America's negotiation with even our adversaries, supposedly, on the UN Security Council, because it's still 1985, somehow, Russia and China signing on to the thing with us. Anyway, and hey, it's the president and Kerry's great success, so maybe the president better come out and give a hell of a speech and talk about why, what a great deal it is. Supposedly he gave one very early this morning that I missed, because they reached the deal and announced it, I guess, the last bit of it in the middle of the night. I wish they waited a little bit. I saw the headline was, he said, it's not on trust, it's all about verification. So we'll talk a little bit more about that on the other side of this thing. And other things. Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org. LRN.FM. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most. Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom, fff.org/subscribe. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. So they did it. They finally reached the Iran nuclear deal. Announced very early this morning. John Kerry proven good for something? That's got to be a first in his entire life. Kerry the Great for a day anyway, man. I don't care. All right, now, so here's the deal, man. Let me give a kind of narrow nutshell here. Bush Jr. comes into power, announces the Axis of Evil, and the deal is all three members of the Axis of Evil were members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty and had a safeguards agreement. Now, of course, in Iraq, there were special circumstances with the bombing and the blockade and Clinton's withdrawing of the inspectors in 1998 before Operation Desert Fox, etc., like that. So they were able to basically, and he was target number one, Saddam, so they were able to just buffalo right in there. Then when it came to North Korea and Iran, they stupidly, on purpose, or stupidly, accidentally, I guess stupidly on purpose, bullied the North Koreans out of the Non-Proliferation Treaty and their safeguards agreement and into nuclear weapons production. And so they've had a nuclear deterrent ever since, say, 2008 or something like that. Great article, I believe, is the heroic Gordon Prather's last article for antiwar.com is called How Bush Pushed North Korea to Nukes. How Bush Pushed North Korea to Nukes. And that tells that story. We've talked about it with John Pfeffer a lot of times on the show, if you want to go back and listen to those as well. And then in the case of Iran, what happened was they put their hands up. They said, hey, your enemies are the Taliban and Saddam? Us too. Let's work together. We can negotiate. They issue what was called the golden offer. Because we don't have diplomatic relations, they sent it through a Swiss ambassador. And he was actually got an official complaint lodged against him and loud verbal dressing down for daring to bring this peace proposal from the Iranians to the U.S. And what it said in there was they were willing to negotiate virtually everything. And this was when their nuclear program was nothing but experiments, you know, at universities and whatever. They had no production scale anything at the time. And they put their hands up and said, hey, 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 don't regime change us. We're not making nuclear weapons. You can ask the IAEA. They're continuing to safeguard our nuclear material. So there are tons of accusations, virtually all of them disproven or explained away with innocent explanations, dual-use technology that the IAEA verified was actually being put to the safe use and not the scary one. These kinds of things this whole time. They never really had a nuclear weapons program this whole time. They have been within the Non-Proliferation Treaty and their safeguards agreement this whole time. The negotiation that has only just ended was just to get them to adopt the additional protocol to their safeguards agreement and along with some other technicalities in exchange for getting the sanctions lifted. And I don't know, they didn't promise to stop threatening Iran with attack. That's very kind of the Iranians to overlook that in, as part of the negotiations, to not insist on an end to all the threats of aggressive war against them. But now, even Bill Kristol this morning, he quotes Aaron David Miller, who is liberal Zionist Democratic Party apparatchik, call him a Hillary Clintonite type, I think is a fair kind of characterization. Bill Kristol quotes him on Twitter this morning. Bill Kristol being the infamous kingpin of the private sector, so-called, the Rupert Murdoch neocons, as opposed to the guys that work in the Pentagon. And anyway, so he quotes Miller saying, they will get money for dropping a weapon they never had. And then Kristol adds, and access to more weapons to spend the money on. Well, so all you have to do is just break that down for a little bitty bit. They will get money. What money? Their money that the U.S. has seized. The U.S. isn't paying them welfare payments to please do this or that or anything. They're going to have a release of sanctions and the melting of assets that have been frozen will be released back to them. And then for dropping a weapon they never had. Yeah, well, you're damn right they never had. They never were working on. There are a few little experiments in the 90s and this and that which have been characterized as weapons research, but they have never had a nuclear weapons program whatsoever in that country that anyone has been able to prove. The CIA and Mossad both agree about that. No, that's not true. They agree they stopped it in 2003, but what they describe as existing before 2003 isn't really a nuclear weapons program of any kind. But anyway, so there you go. And we're just supposed to forget that it's the neocons led by Bill Kristol, a.k.a. the Likud Party's fifth column in the United States of America, that have made this issue an issue. This is their manufactured crisis. A weapon they never had. Yeah, a weapons program they never had. So now that's what Bill Kristol is reduced to? This is a deal to give them nuclear weapons somehow. But, oh, come on, there never was a nuclear threat. Now we're just giving them a bunch of money. That's Bill Kristol's argument this morning? I guess so. Lindsey Graham told Bloomberg, this Iran deal is akin to America declaring war on Israel. Tom Cotton said, it's a terrible, dangerous mistake that's going to pave the path for Iran to get a nuclear weapon. Okay, now that's bull, but at least it's an argument. This guy, Ben Shapiro, this one should have been up near Bill Kristol. Here he is agreeing with Bill Kristol, Ben Shapiro from, Breitbart, or one of those. We just gave Iran billions of dollars to continue supporting terrorism, just assuming all the money that, again, is theirs, that we're giving it to them, and that all of it will be spent, on subsidizing Hezbollah, I guess, and in exchange for nothing. That's right. Because their civilian nuclear program is already safeguarded and is going to remain a safeguarded nuclear program. This is what the right-wing scaremongers are reduced to today. Oh, come on. Whoever said there was a controversy about Iran's nuclear program and anybody needed a deal to limit it more? All they want is war. And by the way, Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, told his cabinet that his worry is that Iran will prove over 15 years that they don't seek nuclear weapons. They'll abide by the deal 100%, that they will not cheat. And then, as he put it, they'll get the kosher stamp for their nuclear program. Yeah, it's already an unalienable right in the Nonproliferation Treaty. Hey, Al Sky here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Again, joined on the phone from Vienna, Austria, by Reza Marashi. He is research director at the National Iranian American Council, and for that he spent years in the U.S. State Department working in the Office of Iranian Affairs there. How you doing, Reza?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Congratulations, celebrations. I hope you're not too drunk already from partying over there. Or maybe you don't drink, I guess.
I appreciate the kind words. I think that, you know, most people here are in a good mood because they've seen something historic and unprecedented happen, but we're also clear-eyed about the challenges that lie ahead. So it's not a matter of resting on your laurels. It's a matter of acknowledging the success that's happened so far and making sure that you can see that success through to its completion.
All right. So lots to tackle here. But first of all, is there anything, as far as you know, or I don't know if you've had a chance to read very much of it or the whole thing yet or what, if you guys kind of divided up the task or whatever. But anyway, is there anything in there that's substantially different or really notable compared to the last round of celebrations when they announced the framework for the final deal a couple of months ago?
Yeah, well, we got a pretty good idea of the various technical limitations that Iran will make to its nuclear program when it comes to the actual facilities that it has and will have going into the future when the Lausanne framework in early April was announced. But now we have a much better idea about just how intrusive and the depth and the scope of inspections and verifications will be for Iran's nuclear program. Dare I say it's unprecedented in the history of the world, and Iran will be the most heavily inspected nuclear program in the history of the world. So that's a good thing. We've also learned a little bit about how Iran is going to emerge from the shackles of UN Security Council resolutions. There is a process for it, and what's notable about that is that Iran is going to be the first country that was under Chapter 7 to emerge without having been bombed. And I think lawyers from both the Iranian side and the American side deserve a ton of credit for literally creating a pathway that did not exist prior to this negotiation. And then, of course, last but not least, at the risk of rambling, there was a very specific detail provided about the kind of tangible sanctions relief that Iran will receive over the duration of this deal that wasn't fleshed out when the framework was agreed upon in Lausanne. So there was a lot of heavy lifting that was done, and a beast of a document has been released, the comprehensive deal. It's available on the internet, and the amount of granularity and detail that they go into is actually quite impressive.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I admit I only had a chance to briefly skim over the very beginning of it this morning so far. But a few things there. When you talk about the amount of detail there, I'm seeing a tweet by a guy named James Acton from the Carnegie Endowment, and he calls himself a nuclear nerd or some kind of nuclear expert. And he's saying about the annex regarding the Arak reactor, that's A-R-A-K, the Arak reactor, that holy cow, this is detailed. But that brings up another aspect of this, which is the scaling back of the nuclear program in Iran as it exists at present. Can you talk a little bit about what difference does it make, Iraq pre-agreement versus now?
Yeah, I think the Iraq facility is essentially going to be reconfigured as a joint project between the U.S. and Iran so that it's not going to produce the kind of heavy water that you would have previously seen it produce had the deal not been struck, and that reduces the overall proliferation risk. That's the most important thing that I think emerges from that aspect of it. But I think even more important than, not more important than reducing the proliferation risk, but equally important is this idea of joint U.S.-Iran collaboration, and also this idea of two sides that hadn't been talking for over 30 years finding ways to produce mutually acceptable solutions. That's not something that really had happened at any point in time short of in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. So when you combine all of these things together, the political side and the technical side, it's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is impressive. What you're saying is they could have said, okay, well, you and the Russians reconfigure Iraq. But what they agreed instead was the Americans would work with them on. American scientists would go over to, and it's conversion to a light water facility. Is that right?
That's right.
So in other words, it produces plutonium as waste, but very, very polluted plutonium that they don't even have a facility to reprocess to make weapons fuel out of it. So in other words, the pretension of danger of Iraq will be lifted now.
That's right. That's right. And we, not only because of the actual limitations that are made, by the way, but because of they like the tweet that you mentioned said, it goes into painstaking detail about what each side has to do, because neither side wanted to leave anything open to interpretation. Neither side wanted to leave any ambiguities. And in the event that an unanticipated ambiguity pops up, they have joint adjudication mechanisms and commissions that can resolve this kind of stuff. So, again, in ways that we really haven't seen with other agreements in the past pertaining to nuclear programs generally, or U.S.-Iran more specifically, the details here are absolutely tremendous and exhaustive.
All right, now, so if I saw criticism of it that wasn't just boo-hoo, Bill Kristol saying, well, whoever said they were a nuclear threat, and these kinds of... I don't know what these guys are talking about. But anyway, the credible, seemingly, possibly credible criticism I saw this morning, the one standing alone, was regarding one of those commissions that you talked about. And it was about the inspections of military facilities, so-called suspected ones, although I think that's being generous. But anyway, we'll give them that. And they say, well, if they want to inspect a place and Iran says no, then it gets kicked back to this commission, and then the commission votes, and then they have this many days to go ahead and respond and obey the new commission ruling and this kind of thing. And you add it all up, it's 25 days, and that's enough for the Iranians to do a test of some kind and then stonewall for, you know, almost a month while they skedaddle all the important stuff out the back door. And so I wonder whether you think that that's a real risk.
No, I think that that risk is overstated, because no activity that Iran could take could remove criminalizing traces of radiation. So if Iran conducts some kind of violation, it can be detected. And, you know, they have, I think that that's just the reality of how these things work at the end of the day. And it's, I think we should be intellectually honest about that. And I would go a step further and say that when people present these kinds of criticisms, they don't present viable alternatives. They criticize what's in front of them, and they don't do it in the most honest way. But they also don't say, we should do this instead. The reality of the situation is that anytime, anywhere, inspections was never going to be a viable scenario. And you've seen the P5+1 members, including the United States, come out and say that very openly. Sovereignty issues, national security issues, and espionage concerns were all treated as legitimate on the part of what Iran considered to be in its interests and what Iran considered to be its concerns. Taking that into account, what we do have as a result of this deal is managed access. If there's reason to believe on the part of the international community that a particular site inside of Iran needs to be inspected, the Iranians are approached together with the IAEA. The process is worked through. And frankly, at this point, both sides have an interest in making sure that this process goes smoothly, because neither side wants this process to collapse, given the tremendous political investment that's been made. So again, if people are going to criticize what has been constructed in this deal, they should give you as detailed of an explanation of why it's bad as I just gave you of why it's good. And I don't think it's a coincidence that nobody has been able to do that thus far.
Yeah, no, and again, that's the one, you know, even substantive criticism I found trolling around the right-wing complaints on Twitter today. Instead, it's all just hyperbole. I mean, I won't even trouble you with Lindsey Graham's comments here. But, you know, for example, Tom Cotton, the hawkish freshman senator, says it's a dangerous mistake and it's going to pave the path for Iran to get a nuclear weapon. And that, just like you're saying there, is glaringly deficient of details. Now, what is he talking about? We're going from what to what here? We're going from more centrifuges to less. We're going from plenty of inspections to unheard of inspections. And so yeah, again, he doesn't have to say what he's talking about. He just bloviates it. Whoops. And I talked right up into the break. Hang on 1 second, Reza. We'll be right back. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. So today's the big day. They did it. They've announced the Iran deal. There's a lot to it. A lot to be happy about in that, and a lot to still to come, still to be fought for, as Reza Marashi says. Again, he's at the National Iranian American Council. That's NIAcouncil.org. And they've done so much to push for this de facto peace deal. After all, this is the gigantic, fake, but still gigantic, outstanding issue between the United States and Iran, the straw man excuse for our Cold War. And now it's coming to an end. And so, you know, there's a possibility of a lot better future here if this thing is seen through. Now, so where we left off, we're talking about the inspections of the military sites. And, you know, the way that this is spun is, oh, my God, they must be hiding something here, there, the other thing. And so I wanted to mention that, first of all, there's every reason to believe, including from the analysis of a former very high-level IAEA, American IAEA officials, that all the accusations about what supposedly happened at Parchin are ridiculous, and the IAEA has even been there and inspected already before. The IAEA was invited to inspect out at Maravan, where there were some accusations, and they declined to even go to look at what apparently they don't believe they'll find out there. There's really kind of no reason to really think that that's credible. But then secondly, I also wanted to raise Reza, because I'm sure this is something that you probably wouldn't put it this way, but I think it's important for people to think about this, is what if, you know, Russia, China, France, Britain, and the United Nations and Iran were all insisting that UN inspectors get to go to American military bases whenever they want to inspect whatever they want. I mean, never even mind the army, the American people would not tolerate that, would not allow it to happen, right? One way or the other. That would be an absolutely intolerable violation of our independence. And so it's pretty easy when you think of it that way to see it from their point of view that, look, you can inspect our bases, but we got to have an agreement to do so. And again, as you said, Reza, all of the inertia here is for everybody to get along and see this deal through, not for the Iranians to screw it up over one little military base, or for that matter, for the Americans too either, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing about this deal is predicated on trust. You know, we know where all of Iran's nuclear facilities are. And we are monitoring the entire production and supply chain of every single aspect of this program. So if Iran were to cheat, it would have to be one of two ways. They would either cheat in facilities that they currently have. Their track record of getting caught doing that is damn near 100%, if not 100%. Or they would have to create a completely brand new parallel nuclear program with all new facilities, all new infrastructure. It's taken them this long to construct a Rube Goldberg-type piecemeal nuclear program with various parts assembled from all over the world. It doesn't even work properly. That's why such a big deal of that's why such a big part of this deal is nuclear safety, right? So the idea that they could do this all over again on their own with the most rigorous inspections regime in the history of the world monitoring what they do, and the entire intelligence community of every major global power in the world honing in on them, kind of stretches the limits of believability.
Right.
Nothing in life is 100%, but in my humble opinion, this is pretty damn close.
All right, now, so here's the thing about this. You know, of course, I completely agree with that. We're going from a safeguarded program to an additionally protocoled safeguarded program, and then some, scaled back and doubly inspected and all these things. No question about that. But is that going to stop the war party? Because they haven't been relying on the truth for their arguments this whole time. So what difference does it really make? And they're willing to shift the goalposts around, change definitions of words, and do whatever they want. So, you know, the narrative that Iran is the great Satan is still far from, you know, debunked and extinguished in Washington, D.C.
Well, I think that the majority, not everybody, but the majority of people who oppose this deal didn't fully oppose it on the grounds of Iran shouldn't have a nuclear program. Because the majority of people that oppose this program opposed it before Iran was spinning a single centrifuge. If you look back to the late 1980s and early 1990s, the same people that were calling for sanctions on Iran back then, the same people that pushed for sanctions in Congress in 1995 when Iran wasn't spinning any centrifuges, didn't cite a nuclear program as the reason for sanctions. They cited a whole different set of reasons of why Iran's behavior is objectionable. So, what does that mean at the end of the day? It means some people think Iran's behavior is objectionable, some people don't. But even now that the nuclear issue has the potential to be solved and put to rest once and for all, they're raising a whole other set of issues. So the reality is, they just don't like the regime. And that's fine. You're entitled to not like the regime. But if you don't like the regime, and you want to get rid of the regime, then you need a viable plan to do so. And it's not a coincidence that nobody in the United States or anywhere else in the world has that viable plan. Because if it existed, they would have done it by now. Mm-hmm.
All right, now, I feel like I have to mention this today just because there's a chance you didn't see it and you might want to laugh. Bill Kristol quotes Aaron David Miller on CNN saying they will get money for dropping a weapon they never had and access to more weapons to spend the money on. So, of course, get money, he means the sanctions will be lifted. They'll get their own money, not that they're being put on the dole like Egypt or Israel or something like that. Just that we'll stop stealing from them so much is what he means by get money. And then dropping a weapon they never had, he means, I guess, dropping a weapons program they never had. Stop doing what they weren't doing is what was just negotiated. And, of course, that's what we've been arguing all along, is that they're not even making nuclear weapons anyway. And now Bill Kristol agrees in order to make his argument that the whole thing is for nothing and that now we're dropping sanctions, and all we're getting is that their civilian nuclear program is going to remain safeguarded.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of rich that somebody like Bill Kristol would complain that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon, because he oftentimes cited that as one of his primary concerns. But that's neither here nor there. When it comes to the sanctions issue and the amount of money that Iran will get, we need to be honest about not just the amount, which will be slightly over $100 billion, but how they will receive that money, which will be in phases, not one lump sum, because not even the Iranian government wants to try and absorb $100 billion in one fellow swoop. The kind of impact that that has on an economy, any economy, would be disastrous. So it'll probably be broken into multiple payments, 4, 5, maybe 6. I'm not entirely sure yet. I have to double check. So it's important to point out that this $100 billion has already been allocated and budgeted in the Iranian, in this year's and in future years' Iranian government budget for domestic purposes. Now, there's no guarantee that what Iran plans for domestic purposes now, they'll adhere to going into the future. But for all these proponents of sanctions, wouldn't one think that if Iran starts doing things that we don't like, if it has objectionable behavior that we don't like, whether it's related to its nuclear program or support for terrorism in the region or anything else for that matter, that those sanctions that they love so much can be used as tools to try and deter such behavior? So they can't have it both ways. You have to pick and choose. And it would make everything a lot easier if more people were like Bill Kristol and they just said they wanted war, because then it's easy to have the argument of people who want it and people who don't. When you make arguments that are intellectually dishonest by saying sanctions work, but then they didn't work, Iran wants a bomb, but they don't have a bomb, make up your mind. Which one is it? The American people deserve an honest conversation.
Right. Yeah, they're so crazy, nuclear war can't deter them, but a little bit more time with the sanctions will completely break them to our will.
Okay.
Well, there's not a lot of evidence in the history of the world. Yeah. Right. There's just not a lot of evidence. You know what? Never mind the fact that there's not a lot of evidence. Secretary Kerry said something very compelling at the podium today. He essentially called people naive if they believed that sanctions would force Iranian capitulation. Now, I think that's remarkable because 2 short years ago, the talking point of the U.S. government was the sanctions are working, the sanctions have forced the Iranians back to the table, and the sanctions will continue if the Iranians don't negotiate in good faith. Which one is it? If you can't force, if sanctions can't force the Iranians or any other country into capitulation, then all really sanctions can do is give you leverage so that when you come to the negotiating table, you can bargain the sanctions away. Mm-hmm. If you don't bargain the sanctions away, they become like a blunt instrument. Pretend you're holding a baseball bat and you just start whacking a country over and over again. Is that country going to sit there and just take it, or are they going to fight back? Well, in the case of Iran, as Secretary Kerry acknowledged today, they fought back. And that escalated the conflict to the point where both sides got close to a war. Neither side wanted a war, and in my humble opinion, fortunately, they stepped back from the brink and cooler heads prevailed.
Well, the way you said it on the show the other day really rang true to me and some listeners, too, who responded about this when you said that it was the Iranian expansion of their nuclear program that brought America to the table. And in fact, this is something that Gareth Porter had said on the show for years, that when it came to enrichment up to 20% and the Fordo Com facility, that basically all of that they were doing, I mean, they had domestic needs for it, but it was really a big fat bargaining chip. Here's a giant thing that now we've done that we could give up as something to negotiate because they really didn't need it, you know, not that much anyway. So, oh man, I wanted to ask you about Congress. Music's playing. Hang on, let me keep you one more minute. Congress, tell me if I'm right about this, Reza. We'll be right back, live audience, in just a minute. Tell me if I'm right that now Congress would have to successfully vote this down. They don't have to ratify it for it to be a real thing in the Senate with two-thirds or anything like that. They would have to vote it down in order to kill it, but they would have to really be able to override the president's veto, and they don't really stand a chance of doing that, right?
Yeah, Congress can, you know, they can vote for, they can vote against, or they can abstain. And right now, according to the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, they don't have the votes. That's what they've told the Prime Minister of Israel directly. Prime Minister of Israel has directed or told or suggested, depending on who you talk to, that AIPAC proceed anyway. So there will be a fight on the Hill, and it's not just going to be AIPAC. There's going to be others as well. And I think that it's a fight that the president can win because he's going to fight this fight the same way that he fought the Obamacare fight. He's going to appeal to the national interest of the United States as opposed to the individual political interest of politicians. And I think that's going to be enough when you have military validators, intel validators, former statesmen, current statesmen validators coming out. And by the way, the majority of the international community and all of the global powers coming to Washington and being validated as well. It's going to be a pretty powerful case that's going to be made on the Hill. And Secretary Kerry said it great at the podium today here in Vienna. He said it would be a shame if Congress made the United States unable to fulfill our commitments according to this deal, because that would be Congress turning its back on the international community. Those are really powerful words.
Yeah. Well, and also, as you mentioned on the show before, it'd be backstabbing the American people that want this deal. And so really, regardless
yes,
of what the French
I think
say,
the American
you know?
People, yeah.
All right, anyway, hey, man, great work, and congratulations, because you do have a part in this, and to Trita and the rest of you guys, too, and thanks very much again for your time.
Cool, thanks, man.
All right, y'all, we'll be right back in just a sec.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commoditydiscs. Commoditydiscs.com.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation in the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Puriscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle. All right, well, man, I was supposed to interview the guy, but he's down in the jungles of Costa Rica, and his phone cut out. He sounded perfect, and then his phone cut out, and now I can't reach him. I'll try again in 10 minutes. We'll see. We'll see if his Skype button turns green. Dang yellow Skype. Hey, listen, I know this is shallow and petty, but have you ever noticed just how much Karl Rove looks like a big fat pig? Is that really just a coincidence? Are you fascinated by how people look just like how they are in real life, kind of? Not always, right? Not always. But yeah, sometimes. Anyway. Like Reza Marashi. You look at a picture. I never met the guy in person. You look at a picture of Reza Marashi. He's always got a big old smile on his face. He seems like a pretty fun, loving guy. You can just kind of tell about him, you know, how he looks. Karl Rove, he looks like a big fat pig. I think, by the way, I'm sorry. I didn't even mean to. But now that I brought up Karl Rove, that means it's time to talk about electoral politics a little bit on the show. I am loving this Donald Trump stuff. I mean, first of all, well, here's everything I have to say about it. He's exactly like all of them, only he admits it out loud proudly. That's it. He's just them, only psycho. He's just them, only to the nth degree, kind of acting it out to the fullest kind of fabulous level. You know? And so, hey, Mexicans, you damn right I hate Mexicans. And he just goes on and on and on, right? And yeah, he's just, the guy's crazy. He's completely nuts. Well, I don't know, completely nuts. He's certainly nuts to a tremendous degree. And, you know, he has a certain kind of intelligence, but it's just, you know, being a gangster, really. Writing off his losses onto somebody else's account and moving on with his life. And the thing is he's got such a big ego. Now, maybe he could be threatened, but I don't think he can be bought. And he's got enough money to run an entire campaign all by himself and even go independent if he feels like it. He's already going, oh, yeah, you know, some people say I should run independent. Maybe I should. For now, I won't. Justin Raimondo wrote a thing saying he's a secret mole working for Hillary Clinton just to mess them all up. Because, after all, he's got a record of being a Democrat and loving the Clintons and hanging out with them and donating money to the Democrats far more than to the Republicans over the years and all these kinds of things. Now, I kind of doubt that's true. Although, I don't know, man. Nah. I don't. But I think it's hilarious, though. Because the point is, obviously, in case you missed it with the subtlety of my ingenious phrasing of all of this stuff, is that none of them are any more legitimate than he is to be your ruler. And, of course, I'm including Hillary and Obama and Biden and all the Democrats, too. Jim Webb and the rest of these guys. None of them are any better men than Donald Trump. None of them, if they win the election, would still have any more legitimate claim to rule than him. All he's doing is just, he doesn't know it, but he's the little boy saying the emperor wears no clothes. You know, he's trying to be the emperor, but instead he's just revealing the whole thing for the gigantic sham that it is. You call this a limited temporary constitutional republic? Are you kidding me? This guy who, as Justin Raimondo points out in his article, he says he was against the Iraq war. Nobody can remember him saying it back then, apparently, but I don't know. Maybe he was. Did Snopes ever look into that? I don't know. But he said, yeah, no, we shouldn't have done the Iraq war, but as long as we did it, what we ought to do is kill everybody and take all their oil forever. It should belong to us now. And right, he's like the perfect reader of National Review, the perfect consumer of Fox News. And man, I can't wait till the debates. It's gonna be so funny. It's gonna be so funny. And poor Rand Paul, he just doesn't have it within him to be anti all of these guys. He's got to try to suck up and be like them as much as he can, he thinks. If he can be just another Huckabee, only with a perm, then maybe he'll have, what, as much of a chance as Huckabee? It's just a tragedy, isn't it? And a farce. But, you know, we'll see when the debates come. Possibly Rand Paul has the intelligence, or maybe someone near him does, to think, you know, what you really need is a shining Paulian debate moment like your old man had. Remember when he took on Giuliani? And Chris Matthews and everybody said that Giuliani cleaned his clock? But in fact, no. And the Ron Paul revolution was born that night? Maybe Rand knows that's what he needs to do. He just needs to come out swinging, call them all Wilsonian liberal interventionists. What is it with the neocons anyway? Well, they're all of them, a bunch of former Democrats who believe in all this technocratic social engineering for the planet Earth on your dime and at the expense of your son. Anybody who calls that conservative is a nut. Go back to the Democratic Party where you came from, you kooks, and take Lindsey Graham, the liberal Republican, and John McCain with you. Real conservatives want to save money by abolishing the empire. Real conservatives want to conserve the Bill of Rights by abolishing the empire. That obviously could be the simple Rand Paul platform for the presidency. And you know, people are going to be mad if he tries to run for Senate and president at the same time. So then the question is he going to quit the presidential race in time to keep his Senate seat? Ron could get away with that for a House seat, and because he delivered about a third of the population of his district, or so, I'm just guessing, but Ron had a real safe seat down there, and it is a little bitty House seat south of Houston. Nothing like what Rand Paul is dealing with. And anyway, I don't know if he can do both. I think technically he can. They decided they were going to switch from a primary to a caucus or whatever and duck the rules. But I don't know if that's going to be good enough. But if he wants to stand a chance, he has to wage a revolution inside the Republican Party. And hardcore, but... Donald Trump is going to wage a disruption beyond disruptions. I hope nobody, really powerful enough to carry it out threatens him and forces him out of this race anytime soon. This is going to be absolutely ridiculous. As it should be. Anyway, had to say that. Yeah, in just a few minutes, we're going to try see if I can get Joshua Hughes back on the show to talk about the trip down to Costa Rica. But in case you missed it, in case you tuned in late today, tomorrow's the drawing, live on the show. I guess I'll do it in the last segment of the show. Tomorrow's the drawing. Who gets a vacation for a week for you and a guest? Your own private house, three meals a day, a river and a hammock. And a lot of fun down there. Check out all the details. Follow the hyperlinks there at scotthorton.org/raffle. scotthorton.org/raffle for your chance to support the show and win a trip to Costa Rica. And maybe we'll be right back with Joshua Hughes right after this if we can swing it. Well, the guy lives in the jungle. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, y'all, guess what? you can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. On the line, I've got Joshua Hughes from Verde Energia Pacifica. The website is verdeenergia.org, but they share an E at the end of Verde and the beginning of Energia. There, you get it? Green energy. His farm, his permaculture farm down in Costa Rica. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Joshua?
I'm doing great today, Scott. I think the internet seems to be functioning. So here we go.
Yeah, glad to have you here. Oh, you might want to turn your speaker down just a little bit there.
Okay.
Your mic's good, but your speaker's a little loud. Okay. First of all, tell us about your awesome project that you have down there. What is this thing?
Well, I moved down here about 8-9 years ago with a group of friends that wanted to do something different, kind of get off the grid, see what we could do potentially on our own here. A lot of the people I was hanging out with in Oregon, and especially in the radical political movements, we were trying to figure out how to come up with answers, not just a bunch of no's. I was in the streets protesting, but I wasn't doing much to like come up with the yeses. So we started this collective, this farm down here, and it was a chance to experiment and see what we could create without input from the processes that we didn't really like. I don't like slavery. I don't like, you know, trade imbalances. I don't like all these things that the big hegemonic corporations are doing. So this place was a chance to experiment and come up with our own answers.
So what is it exactly? It's a farm. Well, how big?
Our farm is now 62 acres, and that's a mix between some like local, our food production in like a traditional garden, like you've probably seen near you there and all around. But then we're working here on food forest design, and we're also doing a lot of sustainable things like lumber creation or other types of longer term crops, things that come from the forest, not just from a traditional farming standpoint. So, we've been working on that down here, and now we have maybe 50 acres of what we call zone 5. It's where we keep the stuff that we're going to use long term. So I have trees that are growing now that my daughter will be cutting in 20 years so she can go to university or she can go to Europe on a trip or whatever. So we're really thinking about wealth creation differently.
Very cool, man. All right. Yeah. And so then how'd you come up with the idea to offer a week's vacation down there?
Well, a lot of people have been, I didn't really realize this when I got here, but a lot of people are interested in this stuff. So I've had thousands of people a month contacting me or visiting our website over the years. And we realized quickly that we had a place that could help people kind of see this for themselves. So this is, we've opened ourselves up. We opened a couple of buildings up here for dormitories and for sharing with people that come from around the world to learn. So I love the idea of getting more people here and from different walks of life, more people from different walks of life. So I wanted to do something, whatever I could to help support your show. I really enjoy what you do. And, this is a way I thought I could help, is offering one of your listeners a chance to come here and enjoy this place and learn, and see what we're doing.
Very cool, man. Well, much appreciated. By the way, I hope I remembered to mention that at least a couple of times, how much I appreciate this. And, it sounds like a really cool deal. And I guess, as we said on the show, and it says at scotthorton.org/raffle, of course, airfare is on the winner to get down there, but you'll pick them up from the hotel and basically take care of them for a week, between here and there, right?
Yeah, and we'll teach them about what we're doing here. So they'll get kind of a crash course in what permaculture is and what it means to have collective ownership and the things that we're kind of fighting for here. So I'm excited to share all of that. And normally the people come here for a week, end up coming back the next year for 6 months and doing their own thing here or their own study or whatever. So,
and you said you have a hammock?
We have lots of hammocks, yeah.
Lots of hammocks.
We try to only work in the mornings before it gets hot here. I'm big time on the siesta model. I'm learning that down here. So we enjoy our mornings out in the fields and doing fun stuff and or building or making products. We spend our afternoons reading and listening to things like your program or music or enjoying the hammock, like you say. It's got all things here for us now. It's not just a farm. It's a way of living we're really trying to create here.
Cool, man. And so there's swimming and all kinds of fun stuff to do, yeah?
Yeah, well, we've got a – it's kind of the winter – it's not the winter time right now, but it's kind of the wet season at this moment. So the rivers are a little crazy, but we've got a nice spring-fed swimming pool, no chemicals, right here outside our yoga studio. And this place is just – we really set it up so we could have a nice – you know, we could have our luxury time and we could learn about what we're doing here for the bigger picture. So, like, people that want to can come enjoy and relax during the afternoons and – listen, I don't know if you can hear it, but there's birds and cicadas all around me here right now. It's quite beautiful. Nice sunny day. But it'll be raining really hard later on, and we'll sit in here and we'll discuss the world and politics and how we're going to affect change. And someone could go fishing in my ponds and eat a bunch of tilapia while they're here if they want to. So it's just whatever people want to do. But it's really a chance to see what we've done and to understand some of the principles and see how it applies in the big world. I think small is beautiful, and what we've done here is a little example of what can be done anywhere.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. All right, well, thanks again very much for this, Joshua. It's been very helpful for the fundraiser, and it obviously promises to be a lot of fun for whoever wins it. And the hearing, I'm your honor now. The drawing is tomorrow.
Yay.
Here on the show, the drawing is tomorrow, and I don't know how many entries we've got, but quite a few. And thank you very much. Oh, and you also said, too, if I can quote you right, that anybody who entered gets half off any future stays down there. And, in fact, I just got an email from you this morning. Before I drank coffee, I almost completely forgot about it. Where is it? I got a thing from you where you talk about next time, too. You want to mention that real quick?
Oh, well, we're going to have a permaculture design course in January, and it's really like a radical redesign of like how communities can work. And it's a crash course with some really beautiful teachers that are coming here for about a month. And I'm going to offer a few scholarships to that out to listeners of your show and a few of the other media outlets I really love. And we're going to start that soon. So I'll keep you posted.
Cool.
But this week long vacation will be a good taste, but I would love for more people that are coming from our side of the political spectrum here, people listen to your show to realize how empowered they can be and take activism and really get it into their local community and local soil. So we're going to be doing that in January, and I'll be happy to share in any way I can to help keep your show funded and do whatever we can.
Right on, man. Isn't it ironic how living the dream means being an American expat? So many people think about, you know, where to flee, where should I go, where can I live and be free? I'm so terrified of the state here. Well, here's a guy who's actually doing it and showing you how too. So check out.
Yeah, well,
Rade
I was
Energia.
Frustrated when I was living up there. I found a lot of frustration, and the news mostly demoralized me. I had to get something started, and Costa Rica is one of the few places in the world that doesn't have a military, so that's why I really chose this place. They focus their national wealth on things like education and healthcare and things like that. So, yeah, but this can be done anywhere, and that's one exciting part of this now is I've learned how to calm myself down enough to see the light here and see how to help guide people through this, even if they live in Texas or Oregon or Florida or New York. So.
Cool, man. All right, well, thanks again very much, Joshua. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, so that's Joshua Hughes, and the website is verdeenergia.org. Share the E in the middle there. Find the link at scotthorton.org/raffle. Again, the drawing is tomorrow, Wednesday, July 15th, 2015. Here live on the show. Buy your ticket before it's too late. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Hey, thanks again, everybody, for supporting this fundraiser. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the fact that you guys appreciate the show. Sorry to interrupt important news, but, man, did you see this? I mean, maybe the goddamn lying evil government faked it, but I guess not. They have a brand new, incredible picture, most detailed picture ever of the planet Pluto. And it has a gigantic blank desert something on the face of it in the shape of the face of Pluto, the Disney character. So if you go to this website, TheVerge.com, I just found the tweet and followed it from there, TheVerge.com. And everybody's superimposing pictures of Pluto, the dog, over the shape on, and one of them it makes the planet look like his space helmet kind of thing. That's really something else, man. Great picture of Pluto, too. Very cool. So, anyway. I don't know about the BS and this legend has it thing that they say here, but. Anyway, so. Yeah, that's pretty neat, man. I never saw a picture of Pluto that looked that good before, did you? Alright. Now, and yeah, by the way, couldn't that have been a, you know, Monster Energy Drink space probe up there instead of a U.S. government tax-funded one? I think the answer is yes. Raise capital voluntarily and invest it in spaceships, if that's what you want to invest it in. Hell yes. Why not? I'm for that. Spaceships. Absolutely. But why's it got to be a government agency? What the hell is this? Russia or something? Anyway. All right. So, yeah, man, donate to the show. ScottHorton.org/raffle. ScottHorton.org/donate. Like I say, if you donate $100, you get a raffle ticket. Plus, you also get a QR code commodity disc. You get Sheldon Richman's book, Your Money or Your Life Against the Income Tax. The great Charles Goyette's book, Red, Blue, and Broke All Over. And then, Lou Rockwell's audiobook, narrated by me, the book Fascism versus Capitalism. And I'll send you the promo code type situation so you can get that. And then again, one more time, anybody donates $250, which is probably a low number of you, I think it's safe to say, you get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks, all libertarian stuff. The couple of dozen he's done so far, had done so far, and all the ones to come. And there are some great ones lined up, too. So, check all that out. ScottHorton.org/donate is where you find all that information. ScottHorton.org/raffle. And if you follow the links at ScottHorton.org/raffle, you can find Joshua Hughes' site, Verde Energia Pacifica. And if you look at the little three bars on the right-hand side there, click that and click gallery, and you can see all the great pictures of their Shangri-Lanus. I don't know what that means. The Shangri thing means paradise. Sure looks nice. Anyway. Hey man, $50 for a chance to win a week down in Costa Rica in the jungle. Having fun. Seems worth it. I'd enter myself, but there's a conflict of interest. You know, if I draw my own card, you might not suspect, or, I mean, you probably would suspect that I didn't choose fairly. Looks great, though, man. Gotta say. All right. That's ScottHorton.org/raffle. Now, what time is it? I gotta say important things. I'll tell you what. Next segment, I'm going to talk about Iraq. It's very important Iraq news. But let me fill out this segment by talking about a couple of things that I probably wouldn't really get to most of the time. And one of them is something that was brought up. I saw a reporter covering Hillary Clinton's speech yesterday, quoting her saying she wants to close the loopholes that encourage American businesses to move overseas. Now, first of all, what the hell kind of Pat Buchananite protectionism is that? Damn Democrats. Well, it's the same thing. It's just, you know, more unionite. Whatever. Protectionism is bad economics. Bad economics. If companies want to move overseas, great. People overseas need jobs too. And Americans need lower prices, especially in an age of massive government money printing. There's nothing wrong whatsoever. There's no such thing as these nation states, you silly person. People want to engage in trade with each other. Who the hell is the U.S. government to tell them that they can't under whatever circumstances? And I'm not talking about government-to-government transfers of weapons here. I'm talking about the free market, or, you know, the remnants of it. The bit of it that exists in the world. And that's not an endorsement of free trade agreements, which are all, of course, managed trade and, you know, WTO empowering global governmental organization empowering treaties and these kinds of things. I'm not for that. But anyway, so Hillary Clinton says, oh, yeah, no, we want to close these loopholes that move American jobs overseas. But then, so what about this? OPIC.gov. OPIC. The overseas. Oh, man. See, I knew it yesterday, and now I forgot what it was. They subsidize. There's no loophole at all. It's an entire organization created to subsidize American businesses moving their jobs overseas. So what the hell is it? It's man, I can't believe I blew the acronym for you right here on the goddamn thing. It's the Welfare for American Companies Moving Overseas Act. That's what it is. Seems like it would say here. All right, well, so I suck. But the point is, it ain't no loophole. It's just like on The Simpsons, pro-tobacco programs and anti-tobacco programs being funded with the same tax money. Same kind of thing. What the hell? They don't spell out the name of the thing on the website. You click on who we are, and they still only refer to them by the acronym, themselves by the acronym. Investment Corporation. But what's the P stand for? God dang it, Scott Horton, you suck at this. Anybody in the chat room helping me? No. You guys suck too. No, I don't know. It's my fault. Point being, you're not free. The government's working against you. As Harry Brown would say, breaking your leg and then promising to hand you crutches. Crippling your economy and then crippling it worse in the name of helping you. But since I'm too dim to figure out what the hell that acronym is, I better change the subject to this great article in Forbes about the Kelo decision. It's already been 10 years. Can you believe that? The Kelo decision, when the Supreme Court ruled that the implied recognition of a power in the Fifth Amendment means that the government can seize private property to give it to other private property owners, not for a necessary bridge or freeway ramp coming through, which is a whole different debate. But as they put it in this article, he quotes the Supreme Court justice asking, you're saying they could tear down a Motel 6 just to put a Hilton there? And the lawyer said, yes, absolutely. If that means that it would be economic improvement for the community at large and the government agencies, the relevant government agencies are presumed to have more tax revenue as a result, then that just goes without saying. That's good for the public at large. And so never mind the rights of the property owners who are being robbed. And the Supreme Court upheld that madness. And so that's the law of the land now. And this is a great article explaining about all the damage that's done. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, all right, so thanks. Welcome back to the show. Thank you to Martin in the chat room. Well, you can understand why it threw me off. It's the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. which means it's government welfare to private companies to leave the country. It's basically government subsidized insurance for them too. Is a big part of it. I guess it's been a little while since I read in depth about it, but I seem to remember something about how if the locals decide to burn your factory down, because how dare you treat them the way you treat them? Well, don't worry, Uncle Sam's got you back there. He'll bail you out. And by he, that means everybody with no political power in the country with a government gun to their head paying your way. So go ahead. Risk-free. In fact, there's could be, in some situations at least, more risk in trying to produce whatever it is you're trying to produce here than overseas, because you can get more government protection and welfare to do it over there. And that's a businessman's look at it, right? Never mind the morality of a businessman going on the dole. They're just like everybody else and go on the dole as fast as they can, any way they can. I remember seeing a thing one time where a guy, his entire career was buying property in flood zones, getting government FEMA flood insurance, getting flooded, and then cashing in, and then building another house, and then doing it again and again and again, and just taking his $50,000 cut each time and building another house. It's all on credit, and it's all guaranteed by the U.S. government. What a racket. He wasn't even committing a crime, right? He just figured out how it worked. And why would you need government insurance? Because no private insurance company will give you insurance for a price that you can afford to build a house where it's going to flood. Because, you know, math. So, oh, don't worry, though. The government will come in and they'll subsidize what no private company ever would. They'll guarantee what no private company ever would. That's the game the government is in. While Buchananite Clinton talks about her plan for protectionism, we're going to close those loopholes, but not the agencies devoted to the causes of the loopholes I'm demagoguing against. All right. And I'm sorry I'm not going to have a chance to talk about Yemen today. Tomorrow, Phil Giraldi is going to be on the show to talk about the MH17 shoot down and also the new Homeland Security goons being sicked on us. He's got a good eye, that Phil Giraldi, man. He noticed that, too. Jesse Walker had a thing in Reason about it you might look at as well. This is in the American Conservative. Okay, now, here's the big news. Coburn and Prothero both have pieces here. My two favorite reporters in Iraq right now. And they say, hey, it's a real battle. It's on. The, I guess, does it even include the Iraqi army? I don't think either of them even mention the Iraqi army in here, do they? Well, they mention the defense ministry. Oh, loyalist troops. They do say loyalist troops here at Prothero. Okay, so it's what's left of the Iraqi army, so-called, along with, we don't know, I don't know for sure, but we could assume the Badr Brigade, the Mahdi army, Asaib al-Haq, and whatever other Shiite militias. I don't know them all. And they are making a run at Fallujah. And I don't know, man. I think Prothero and Coburn are both very skeptical, and I gotta admit that I am too. And I just got an email from Coburn saying he can't do it because he's going out to do journalism. Maybe I'll have him on the show for you tomorrow. I'll certainly try. But so, okay, if you're not familiar, Baghdad is more or less, it's an oddly shaped country, obviously, sort of California shaped, a little bit fatter, though. And more or less, sort of kind of Baghdad is in the middle of the country. And then all the land down to the southeast between Baghdad and Kuwait, that's all Shiistan. And then the Islamic State is all the land west of there, basically the entire Anbar province and all the way up into Mosul up in the north near Kurdistan and near the Syrian border, which kind of runs from southwest to northeast, if you understand what I mean. So anyway, the Anbar province, especially Fallujah, has been under Islamic State control for a year and a half. Not since the declaration of the caliphate, but from January of 2014, right at the time that Obama was calling them the junior varsity. So Mosul only fell to the Islamic State 6 months later in June of 2014. So, Now, these militias, you know, I told you, despite the hype, I don't know, man, I'm pretty skeptical of the hype, and I'm pretty sure that the Shiite militias are not going to have a problem holding on to Baghdad. I don't think the Islamic State is a real threat to Baghdad because it's completely populated by Shiites now. America fought that war for them, kicked all the Sunnis out, cleansed the land, the city of Sunnis for them. And so, you know, the Islamic State, they don't have the power to overrun Baghdad. They can suicide bomb it, but they can't take it over. But then, can the Shiite militias conquer Sunnistan? Conquer the Islamic State? Drive them out of Fallujah? Now, they did drive them out of Tikrit, but the Islamic State didn't really fight for Tikrit. They left behind a token force of snipers and basically piles of IEDs, and they held Tikrit for a few weeks, but then more or less withdrew. And then just after that, they retook the Baiji refinery, taking it probably permanently offline. And they took the second half of Ramadi. They had already ruled half of Ramadi. And they seized and drove the Iraqi army and so-called Iraqi government, the last vestiges of it, out of Ramadi. So now, just, what, a month later? 6 weeks later? The Shiite militias are going to take on Fallujah, and they've had over the past few weeks, they've announced, yeah, we're preparing to attack. We're gonna head right into the Anbar province right now. And I'm saying, you and what army? And Coburn is reporting here, read him at uns.com. It may already be in the top news at antiwar.com. I hope it is. It's ISIS in Iraq, thousands of Shia militia men to join decisive battle to take back Fallujah. Lack of experience risks heavy casualties. Yeah, lack of heavy equipment, too. Lack of firepower. And, yes, lack of training and expert coordination, these militias. And now the Iranian special forces have got to be there, right? The Quds Force, the Revolutionary Guards have got to be there. But I think that the Sunni... Oh, and Coburn says, unlike when the Marines slaughtered and destroyed the city in 2004 twice, first in the spring and then in the fall right after the re-election of George W. Bush, they didn't even give civilians a chance to leave, and the Islamic State won't let them leave. Now, they don't have anything like the firepower that the Marines brought to bear against Fallujah in 2004, and so, I don't know, or in 06, or whenever they fought there. So I don't know if they can do it, but there's a hell of a lot more civilians in the way. But then again, that just means all these civilians are basically, you know, reserve forces. Grab an AK if you got one, because here comes the Shiite militia men who are going to be merciless in their attack. We know how these guys do with civilians. Power drills to the skull. And so the Sunnis there are being driven, you can bet right now, straight into the arms of the Islamic State. I don't even like these guys, but hand me a rifle. I got to go join them right now because here comes the attack. They are the state, right? It's like Americans rallying behind George W. Bush. War is the health of the Islamic State. And I just, man, I don't know. Yeah, I guess if they had full-scale cooperation between America and Iran, our special forces, you know, lasing targets for our bombers, and just, I don't know, how many hundreds of thousands of Shiite militiamen storming the place. I don't know, man. And even then, think of how horrible that is. What America's already done to so-called cleanse Baghdad and other areas of Iraq of Sunnis. And look what happened in the aftermath of the Shiite militias with Iranian and American help taken to Crete back a couple of months ago was, and I, you know what, I admit I'm not all the way up on my latest news out of Tikrit, but the last I understand it, they haven't really allowed the Sunni population to come back, and the Sunni population are afraid to come back because it's now under the rule of the Shiite militias. So maybe that's the border of Iraqi Shiistan. Have been extended a little bit there. And of course, this fits in perfect with the narrative of the Islamic State. And it's a real test of their power. I mean, I guess we'll see. And by the way, I'm rooting for them to lay down and die, the Islamic State. The Ba'athists and the jihadist coalition that's taken over that place now. They're horrible bastards, and, you know, may they, I don't know, shoot each other like on Jacob's Ladder or something and just leave everybody else alone. But seeing a massive sectarian war, the continuation of America and Iran's Shiite sectarian war against the Sunni parts of former Iraq, promised to have devastating consequences for the near, mid, and long-term future, too. Here we go again.